You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hi, I'm David Crabb, and I was the only gay goth Texan in the room. The way that I looked and the people I ran with were so opposite the norm in San Antonio, Texas, that kind of eclipsed the gay, not just to my friends who knew and didn't care, just going to the mall or to pump gas in my car or to my guidance counselor's office. It was almost like gay wasn't the first thing on their mind because they were more concerned with like, what is in your nose? Finding this little cluster of like-minded, you know, kids in combat boots at school and at the mall and stuff. That was the first time I found family. It didn't come from normalizing. It actually came from the opposite. It came from really like finding my niche.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. So we are here talking to David Crabb. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. So I was telling you, I have these really cool interview decks. I got it at a podcast festival that I was at a couple weeks ago. So I've divided these cards into three piles, and I'm going to ask you to pick a number between one and three.
This is so exciting. As a former goth, you know, this is very in my tarot wheelhouse. So I
really like this.
I'm going to go with three.
Three. Okie dokie. This says, what three things would you leave in a time capsule for people to open in 50 years?
Oh, my gosh.
That's a good one.
It is a good one.
This question is literally three times more challenging than what I expected, so it's appropriate. What three things would I leave? I would leave a vinyl record.
Okay.
Because the children need to know.
Yes.
I would leave a bunch of photos and videos and archived bits of my nephew, because he's one of my favorite humans in the world. And I would want him at nine to be just eternally enjoyed by people because he's brilliant and funny and cool.
Yes.
And gosh, a really good cup of pour over. I'm a low-key coffee addict. And right. And maybe coffee will never change. Maybe it's really redundant of me to put it in there. It's so funny when you ask that question because you're saying personal, but in my mind, I'm like, what do people need to know?
Right.
What do people need to know? CDs were very cool. Put a CD in. No. yeah, maybe that would. Maybe those would be my three things.
All right. So a really good pour over, a little like mixtape video audio of your nephew.
Yes.
And wait, what was the first thing?
And a vinyl record.
And a vinyl record. Yeah.
Just because analog, I know that they're coming back now, but I feel like, I mean, the new thing is cassette tapes are coming back. And that to me is just so bizarre. Like, who wants to do that?
Well, It's everything old is new again.
I guess so, yeah.
that's great. Thank you. Thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins. This is the only one in the room, but I'm never the only one in this room because as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So like I said, we're talking to David Crabb. He is an LA-based author, performer, storyteller, and host of The Moth and Risk. So exciting. I'm so excited about this conversation.
I'm excited about this too.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here.
So we already said that you are the only gay goth Texan in the room, which is so cool. I love that only one statement. But how did you identify in high school?
I mean, if you asked me in freshman year versus sophomore, you'd get wildly different answers. I mean,
tell me freshman. Yeah.
Oh my God. Freshman year, I think I still had one more girl I attempted to date. I was really trying to wallflower it. So I kind of almost wallflowered too far the other direction, meaning like I would wear like khakis and a little blue button down. I looked like a tiny lesbian that worked at Best Buy. Like that was my interpretation of I'm going to try to look straight and normal like these other guys. But the attempt kind of like backfired and just made me look like, who is this Puritan that's going to talk to me about becoming a Mormon? So that was kind of me. There, my freshman year, I led a very sort of structured, careful life.
Right. But you identified then as straight?
I mean, I did in the sense that like, I would never dream of telling anyone I was gay.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like when you're gay and in the closet when you're young, it almost feels like, especially in Texas and especially in the late 80s, like it wasn't even like anything I could be. So my brain didn't think of it as a way that I would become eventually. Like that was my future. It was like asking me like, hey, when were you going to become a unicorn?
Right.
I was like, well, that's never gonna happen.
Yeah.
So it just kind of felt like managing my expectations about the future. So then I kind of feel like, you know, what happened is I found one other friend freshman year. I mean, I kind of knew him throughout middle school, but we really connected freshman year. And he just kind of became my person. Like, you know, looking back, it was so clear who we both were, you know, like we both liked songs and singing and he was wildly athletic and danced around a lot. We totally found each other in that sense that we knew without knowing who we were, but kind of our breakthrough was finding this MTV late night video program called 120 Minutes. And that was the video show where for 2 hours, they just played all of like The Cure, Depeche Mode, Susie and the Banshees, Bauhaus, anything dark and gloomy and British with a fog machine where someone was singing sadly about sex or sexily about death, depending. And that was kind of our breakthrough where we were like, I like this. You like this too. Do you want to try putting makeup on and all that stuff?
That's really interesting to me. I had never heard of that show. I was definitely tuned into MTV then, but I don't. It was like I was watching Yo MTV Raps, I guess, or whatever was on then. I wasn't watching that. I didn't know anything about goths. I grew up in the Bay Area, partially. So I certainly seen them, but I didn't know there was a name for them or what it even meant. And this is what I found on the interwebs about being goth. It says, a goth is someone who finds beauty in things others consider dark. They love all that is dark and mysterious. It doesn't mean that goths are evil. It just means they have a different perspective to many. It also doesn't mean goths are unkind, violent, or lacking in humor. In fact, quite the opposite is true. Goths love to laugh out loud. Their humor is more of black comedy sort. They aren't sad because they like dark things. Dark things make them happy and inspire them. Would you say that that's true?
That's one of the sweetest descriptions of gothery I've ever heard.
Right?
You said something so interesting just now. You were like, in that first part, you were like, they find the darkness and beautiful things. And what's so funny to me is I always tell people that think goths are really depressive, that they're kind of the clowns of the alternative
yes.
kids.
Yes.
And for me, as my friend and I kind of expanded our network as we found them of kids that wore capes and dog collars and combat boots, they also find the funny in the dark. Like there's kind of a flip of it where
right.
It was actually quite a humorous clique to belong to. Like once I got in, it was more of that outward projection that was like the, I'll show you my fangs if you mess with me kind of thing. But when we were all together, we were just like cracking jokes and laughing and probably doing illicit drugs a lot. So
also I found examples of goth. What did you just say before? You said gothery?
Gothery, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Which is kind of my funny. I don't know if that's really a
we're making it a word term. Right here, right yes. now. But of goths, they had Alice Cooper, who I'm not very familiar with, but I know I've seen Alice's photograph and probably some video. Elvira, the mistress of the dark or the night? I can't remember which one.
The dark, I think.
The dark, yeah. Rose McGowan, Marilyn Manson. Would you say that they're all goth? Would you identify them as goth?
Yes, they are. But Marilyn and especially Alice Cooper operate more on like, because there is a fun like metal or like rock crossover to goth, where it's a little more like testosterone and rage fueled versus my goth and the goth of most of my friends, which definitely leaned way British. You could not find an American musical artist in our catalogs of stuff we listened to. It was more of the less angry black eyeshadow and more of like the, I'm really horny at a funeral black eyeshadow. So the vibe was a lot more like Depeche Mode, The Cure. It was like mournful longing versus like, I'm mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So not scary. The vibe wasn't scary in a violent way. The vibe was like Halloween scary, kind of.
A little bit more like we didn't want people to not talk to us because we might flick our tongue at them and scream. We wanted people to not talk to us because they were like, that person is journaling such intense stuff right now that I could never understand. So I'm going to leave them alone. Like that
so you're
was
like
more
above.
Of a vibe.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a snobbier goth than the metal goth.
Describe your parents for me.
My mom is a tiny redhead woman from Newfoundland, Canada. She lived in Texas when I was born. So it was kind of fun. You know, my mom and I talk a lot about this now. I was very much raised by someone who, you know, you should have her on the podcast sometime. She was very much the only one in the room. My mom was like a deeply liberal, super progressive, fun, curious little woman that had this crazy accent. She sounded like a leprechaun. And she's like 5 feet tall. And, you know, being raised by her in Texas, in San Antonio, was really interesting. Because I kind of grew up with someone that I think I was, you know, and especially as an only child, and my parents got divorced when I was two, we felt very much like it's no mystery to me that I ended up
yes.
being a little bit of a weirdo, you know? My dad was born and raised in San Antonio, and very much like traditional San Antonio guy, like love Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard and wore Wrangler jeans and cowboy boots, you know, trucker hats, you know, drove an RV and all that. So we were very much, especially as I entered adolescence and came out, he was much more of the challenge for me than my mom. That was almost like, my mom was like, finally. I think she
yeah.
tried to act surprised when she found that I was gay, but I clocked it.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
I assumed when I was first told about you by our friend Stephanie, so we have to shout out Stephanie. Yay, Stephanie, thank you. She said that, you know, you were goth and gay in San Antonio, Texas. And that was all, I think that's all she needed to say. And before I was like, I want him on the show. I assume that meant you would be double bullied, that you would be bullied for being gay and that you'd be bullied for being goth. And so that you would be constantly like on the run and in fear. But what you described to me was more of the goth was a little bit of a protection against being bullied for being gay because that kind of covered it up. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but can you tell me a little bit about that?
I think it was interesting being that kid I described to you, you know, before I was goth or out when I wore like khakis and tried to hide and dated the first available girl who, you know, had a crush on me, is that it really made me othered. Like in retrospect, looking back, I see pictures and I'm like, oh my God, that poor kid, you know? And the thing about finding a best friend in Greg and then kind of expanding our goth world and then finding this little cluster of like-minded, you know, kids in combat boots at school and at the mall and stuff was that was the first time I found family. It didn't come from normalizing. It actually came from the opposite. It came from really like finding my niche. And the cool thing about being in that niche is like, I still remember, you know, Greg and I kind of came out to each other first. And then slowly we're like, well, we're going to tell our friends. And we're like, we're going to tell them we're bi first. We're like, we're going to just like, you know, training wheels it.
Yeah.
And I remember it was so, I always remember I told this girl, Shira, and Shira had a mohawk. She wore one silver contact lens. She had an ancient metal lunchbox that looked like it had been hit by like gunfire as a purse. Yeah. And I remember when I told her that I wasn't straight, she just was smoking a clove and she was like, okay.
Mm.
As if to say like, that's all you got.
Right.
And
right.
And it was really fascinating to then suddenly be in a culture where the way that I looked and the people I ran with were so opposite the norm in San Antonio, Texas, that kind of eclipsed the gay, not just to my friends who knew and didn't care because they didn't care about sexuality and they weren't, you know, bigots in that sense. Just going to the mall or to pump gas in my car or to my guidance counselor's office, it was almost like gay wasn't the first thing on their mind because they were more concerned with like, what is in your nose?
Right, you know? Right. Can you describe what you look like then?
I mean, there were definitely stages. You know, there was the weekend look at Club FX, which was in this like abandoned cinder block building by the airport. And that would be all out. Black eye makeup, sometimes black lipstick, hair styled up, a torn t-shirt of like a band shirt, torn up jeans, combat boots. And then like at school, it was more of kind of a new romantic look. I had long hair to my shoulder, so I would gel it back really hard and set it in a ponytail. And then the gel dried, it almost gave me like a mini facelift. Like it like literally pulled my eyebrows up, which were plucked and penciled in, mind you.
Of course.
A little bit of white face powder, some frilly paisley shirt with big cuffs, tight jeans, and then like boots. And sometimes I'd wear like a little brooch at the neck of the shirt, which was buttoned to the top. So that was kind of the way that we looked. And it was interesting because even though you could say that some of these looks were more, like the one I just described was a little more fae looking than the first one, to the woman who was the cashier at the mobile station, I was just so weird looking. Like the first thing that came to her mind, I think, wasn't you know, does this boy like boys? It was like, oh my God, does he worship Satan? Has he killed a black cat on a pentagram in the park?
Yes, yeah.
And I think that was an interesting thing about the camouflage.
Right, like, were you Ozzy Osbourne?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to bite the head off a chicken before I was going to do something, you know, untowards and unchristian at, with another man. So I think that was part of the operating mindset there.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So let's get into the story. I want you to tell me the story about your dad, the guidance counselor, and the penthouse. That sounds like a good title for something, right? My dad, the guidance counselor, and a penthouse. So yeah, so tell me that story.
It's a nice set of three. So when I was, when I was in middle school, I mean, you know, I think all young adolescent boys find their first porno, but I think for gay kids, it's a way more kind of private, shameful experience. Like I remember having friends or being at a boy's house when I was little with straight, because, you know, every boy was straight, of course. And, you know, they take out the dad's Playboy and you'd gather around it, you'd all gawk at the boobs or whatever. And, you know, when you're gay, for me, that was a Penthouse magazine of my dad's. And I found it, and what the reason that it was appealing to me is because Penthouse was a little more risque than Playboy. So they would have centerfolds that had a man and a woman doing it. Of course, they wouldn't show anything, but you would see plenty of naked male body and butt and all that. And God, there was this issue he had that just had, I called him Rolando. He wasn't named in the spread, but he,
you named
and
him.
I did. His name was Rolando. He was tan and the couple was doing it on the beach. There's a lot of very cheesy stuff with like his bottom with her sandy handprints on each of his butt cheeks and things. And because, of course, the magazine's geared for men, the woman was always fully visible, her face, everything. He always had wet hair in his face. Like he had no face. And I think that that was even interesting because I could put anyone's face on him, you know, I'm like, oh my God, he's Mark Wahlberg. He's Ethan from Gym Class, right? So this magazine was something I discovered when I was young that I spent way too much, quote unquote, shameful time with. And when I was in my full gothery in high school, one day my guidance counselor, Cookie Richardson, who is a man, mind you, I just love that his name is Cookie. He called me into his office. And when I walked in, the first thing that I saw were all the notes that I had forged with my dad's signature to skip out of school, which I've been doing a lot, to like get high or drop acid at the mall, do whatever. And then I heard something and it was my dad clearing his throat in the corner of the room, sitting at the desk. And I was like, well, here we go. And I sat down and, you know, I think Cookie began his kind of innocuous step-by-step things. He asked a kid in trouble. And the first thing was like, would your dad understand if you were doing drugs? And I was like, no. I mean, it was like a Meryl Streep performance. I'll pee in a cup right now. And I was stoned actively in this meeting.
Of course.
So we moved past that hurdle. And the next question was, would your dad understand if you got a girl pregnant? And that almost made me laugh. I was like, oh, little does my dad know, you know, he'd understand, blah, 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 blah. And then I almost thought I was out of the woods. And then Cookie was like, would your dad understand if you told me you were gay?
Mm.
And in retrospect, I realized that Cookie was asking me all of these questions as hypotheticals.
Yeah.
Something about hearing it that way, like it was a fact, I don't think I was prepared for it. And I cracked and I started sobbing. And I just said, no, he wouldn't understand. And like, I had been doing so much great work to kind of protect myself from not just getting busted for drugs, but this mainly. And the vibe in the room changed and my reaction made it really clear, I think, to both of them what was going on, at least a part of it. And I could tell Cookie was really uncomfortable because I don't think he meant this to happen this way. I didn't think he knew how triggering it would be. I think he could see my dad's discomfort immediately. And even I think if I could talk to Cookie today, he'd be like, that was a mistake on my part. Like he very sweetly was like, why don't y'all go home for the day? And I went home, I slammed the door to my room. I blasted the saddest Morrissey Pet Shop Boys songs I could find. And I could hear my dad in the living room and Cookie called him. And I could tell that like my dad and Cookie were talking about counselors and family therapists for us to go to and all the stuff. And eventually my dad came into my room and he was very like timid. It was almost like I was like a wild cougar that he got locked in a cage with. Like he didn't know how to kind of respond.
Yeah.
And eventually he sat down and I was still a little weepy. And he said, you know, DJ, he called me DJ. I know this is hard and I don't blame you and I'm not mad, but I just want to ask you a question. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. And I said, okay. And he took out that penthouse from behind his back with the cover. The cover was this woman and Rolando's like butt in like a thong. That was the cover. Right. And he showed it to me and he said, I just want to ask you one more time. Which one of these people do you find more attractive? And I was like, oh my God. I had this moment where I thought I could undo it now and I can rewind the tape and I can say that maybe I was high, because maybe that would be better. I was high in Cookie's office. Right. Her.
Yeah.
But it was just like the cat was out of the bag and it had been so painful to keep in. And I pointed and I was like, him, in my mind, Rolando.
Yeah.
And I remember this moment where it was like, it really hit my dad. And he stood up and I thought, God, he's going to scream at me or he's going to disown me, like all the stuff. And he just was so uncomfortable. And he just kind of rolled up the magazine and he said, well, we're having fajitas for dinner. And he walked out of my room.
Wow.
And I would proceed to come out to my dad easily 10 more times that year. It was like gay Groundhog Day. Any little fish food for him to, you know, walking through the mall. Oh, she's pretty. Do you want to talk to her, DJ? I don't know if she's your age. I was like, Dad, that is a 35-year-old woman whose hair I like. Calm down. And it was just so funny to then come out again and again and again. And Cookie was very kind to me. He was always like a cool guidance counselor, but I didn't know him really before that moment.
Yeah.
And when I went back to school, at least for a few months, because what would eventually happen is that I would move away from that school, but he was so kind and he'd be like, how are you doing? You know, how's your dad doing? Are you okay? And eventually what happened from that was that we did a little therapy, but my dad got a job offer on the road. And I think I misbehaved so badly with that group of friends. My mom had gotten remarried a couple years earlier and moved to this really small town, Seguin. So we all kind of collectively decided that it would be better for me to move to this small town, 45 minutes up the road, my dad go on the road and kind of like reset my junior year. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for telling me that. It's actually even a better story than I remembered it being. More impactful and funny. I didn't know his name the first time.
Cookie?
No, Rolando.
Oh, Rolando.
Yeah. I didn't know that he had a name. And we just have a few minutes and there's a couple more things I want to talk about. But you mentioned that you moved. Oh, you have it.
I mean, I know if you're listening, you can't see this, but I performed that story. And in my solo show, I talk about this magazine. I have been gifted this 1987 issue of Penthouse by fans of the show and friends. I think this is the fourth copy I own of this.
That is amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's incredible. Yeah.
We'll have to put a link to that picture somehow so people can see it if they're you know, listening only. Okay, so just a few minutes. I do want to know a little bit about moving to that small town, because you mentioned that was a true only one experience for you. And then I want to talk about your life now after that. So tell me what that was like for you. Why was that an only one experience for you moving to the small town?
Yeah, we moved to this little town called Seguin, Texas, and it's where my stepfather, still my stepdad, one of the coolest guys in the whole world, Glenn, lived when they got married. And Seguin, Texas is just a very small cattle town. Like, it's only 45 minutes up the road from San Antonio, which is a huge city, but it felt like another world. We lived in a tiny house in the country between a primitive Baptist cemetery and a field of cattle. So my neighbors were literally dairy cows and like dead people from the 1800s. Like, it was actually really goth to think of it. But it was a small town. It was known for having the biggest pecan in the state, which was just a sculpture of a giant pecan outside their courthouse. And when I went to school there, I mean, even I wasn't stupid. I was like, I've got to tone this down a little bit, but I still kind of had long hair. You know, I wore my band shirts. I was like, let's tone it in. And when I got to that high school, I was so different, even turned down like that to those kids, that they called me RuPaul. Just to be clear, I was so different to these kids that the closest approximation they could find was a 7-foot-tall black drag queen from Detroit. Like, that, that is how the layers of difference. And,
yes.
And that place was like almost resetting in a weird way to having been the kid in khakis dressed like a Best Buy employee when I was a freshman in the big city. Like, it was like I finally found, like, oh, this is how I feel comfortable. And this is how I found my clique and my crew. And then I got there and it was kind of the same othering all over again. It took a little while, but even there, I did find like you know, like girls with spiral perms that were in the theater department. And like, you know, the one boy that wore big jeans that liked, you know, Smashing Pumpkins. Like I kind of found the
kids.
You
like sourced them out.
Yeah. Like that, yeah. For that culture were alternative. And down the road in New Braunfels, there was a town where I actually found who would be my best friend, this big sharp. Sharp is, it stands for Skinhead Against Racial Prejudice, which is the weirdest niche skinhead movement. But they were these, he was this big skinhead who like rallied against like racism. And it was a strange thing. It was like, we like your fashion, but we hate your ideas. I love the silhouette. Right. And he kind of became my cool. So we were really weird. We were a very odd couple. But for like that last couple years of high school, I was there with my little Vampire Lestat ponytail. And my best buddy was this giant oaf skinhead looking dude in, you know, tight t-shirt. So I managed to always find the weirdo and love them.
Find the weirdo and love them. That's a new slogan. Thank you for that too. I love that. How do you identify now?
I mean, I think part of the ways is I always find that question challenging now because I feel like I know so many different types of people. I feel like I'm just a guy. Like I'm a storyteller and a performer. I've been with my husband for about 18 years.
18 years? Wow. Nice.
Yeah. I'm not an active goth, but I still keep the, you know, I'm in the club. I have my membership card deep in my back pocket. I still listen to all those records. My husband knows more about Depeche Mode than he ever probably wanted to know, but he signed up for it. And yeah, I actually do a lot of storytelling and narrative work with like LGBTQ plus youth now. And it's really cool to know those kids and see that like everything old is new again. Like they still wear the eyeliner and the black. It might be called Hot Topic or emo now, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's still such a big part of the culture. And it's fun to work with them and see those threads still there, you know?
Amazing. Is part of your work connected to The Moth and Risk?
Well, I host The Moth, and when I lived in New York, I worked with their after-school education program, which would be helping kids in high schools tell their own stories.
Really quickly, tell people what The Moth is.
Oh, The Moth, and you can find out a lot about them at themoth.org. They have a show on NPR. It's basically like true first-person narrative. So it's like going to a stand-up show, but instead of 10-minute sets, it's 10-minute stories with an arc. And it doesn't all have to be funny. So that's been kind of my craft, what I do and what I teach for a few years now. And now I do it in LA with Rainbow Labs, which is a after-school LGBTQ plus youth program. And then I host Risk Here, which is a big storytelling show that has a podcast as well.
Amazing. Amazing. So where can people find you?
I'm at just davidcrabb.net, but all the social media things are at the David Crabb.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura. It was a blast.
Thank you, David. That was great.
Hey, honey, what a great episode that was.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, now let's get on with some Patreon shout-outs.
Yay.
Yeah, who do we have up first?
We have Mercedes Cusick, LMFT.
Ah, Mercedes.
Yes, Mercedes is a licensed trauma therapist and a certified EMDR therapist. Mm. This means, I know you're going to ask, right?
Oh, yeah, what does this mean?
She has had advanced training in complex and developmental trauma, and she's doing something really special called EMDR intensives.
Right, in case you didn't know, because I didn't know this.
I didn't know either.
You didn't? You had to look it up?
Yes.
EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. So simply by stimulating both sides of the brain, it helps to heal the brain and desensitizes traumatic or upsetting memories.
That is so dope.
It's cool, huh?
Right? So what she's offering is a concierge curated program that's just for you. Not you, hun, but just for our listeners.
Okay. Could be just for me.
Right. So you could spend a long time in weekly therapy, but why do that when her EMDR intensives, so they range from like a half a day to several days, and they're the equivalent of, get this, 2 to 6 months of weekly therapy.
Honey, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's also been used to effectively treat a wide range of mental health problems. But I think it's important to mention that there's no need to talk extensively about disturbing experiences. And because this intensive format decreases treatment time, it also saves you considerable money in the long run.
Exactly. So if you want to start feeling better now, and why wouldn't you, right? The EMDR intensives are the way to go. And California residents, click the link in our show notes to find the link to Mercedes Cusick's website. Book your EMDR intensive today. That's Mercedes Cusick, LMFT, licensed trauma therapist. She's located in Woodland Hills, California. That's here in Southern California. But see our show notes for the website. It's www.mercedescusick.com.
Speaking of feeling good, what's new with the How to Do the Pot podcast?
Ah, so you're talking about previous guest Ellen Scanlon, who we love.
I am. Welcome back, Ellen. Thank you for being a Patreon.
Yes, and she has the How to Do the Pot podcast, and they are demystifying cannabis for women.
How cool is that?
And now they've just released their new Sleep 101 series, and in these short episodes, real women share how cannabis helps women fall asleep and stay asleep, and not wake up with a weed hangover.
Mm, that sounds important.
And on the regular episodes of How to Do the Pot, every week you can listen to fun, short episodes that answer all the questions women secretly Google about cannabis. How to Do the Pot shares women's personal stories and advice from the experts to help with solutions around stress, sleep, sex, and chronic pain. Did I say sex?
You did. Let's say sex again.
With the goal of helping women feel more confident in their choices about cannabis. If you're ready for practical advice about weed by women for women, listen to How to Do the Pot wherever you get your podcasts.
Next up is Cute Booty Lounge.
It is Cute Booty Lounge. Speaking of by women for women, right?
Right on.
Right. So this was a concept. Kelly Nishimoto.
Kelly's
we love
back.
Her. This was born in Kelly Nishimoto's garage in 2004.
There's a great episode about that.
There is a great episode about that. And she's been a sponsor of the podcast for a long time. But in 2004, she was looking to make pants that embraced a woman's curves, right? Particularly the booty.
Mm-hmm. She did it. She nailed
the name. But she wanted them to still be polished enough to wear out and about. So her signature, the patented scrunch booty pockets, Cute Booty Lounge is made by women and for women, just like I said before, but also right here in the USA. The company is incredible, female and minority owned. So you want to go to cutebooty.com in our show notes and order yours today. What do people always say when I wear the leggings, hon?
Cute booty.
Cute booty. Exactly. Oh, and now Kathleen Hahn, hon.
Hey, Kathleen, a fantastic friend of the show, one of my dear friends for a long time. Thank you so much for supporting our podcast.
Yes, thank you, Kathleen.
We know you're out there working really hard. Really hope that our podcasts are helping you get through your long days.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. Shout out to Kathleen.
Kathleen
Shout out
Hahn.
To Cute Booty Lounge. Shout out to How to Do the Pot podcast.
Ellen.
And Ellen Scanlon, yes. Mm-hmm. And shout out to MercedesQSick.com.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for listening. The Only One in the Room is produced by the creative genius that is Scott Slaughter and edited by the uber-talented polymath Christina Barcy and her team at Avant House Productions. Hey, you're still listening? Good. Please subscribe right now while you're thinking about it, quick, before you forget. And be sure to like and leave us a review of the show. Want to connect with some other Only One listeners? Be sure to join our private Only One in the Room Facebook group or check out Patreon on our website for exclusive content that you won't find anywhere else. And do you have an Only One in the Room story that you'd like to share? Please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.